This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
In April 2018, the Canadian Agency for Drugs and Technologies in Health released its strategic plan for the years 2018 through 2021. Titled Transforming How We Manage Health Technologies, this plan refines the agency's vision for achieving better outcomes and value for Canadians, which is also a major focus for our 2018 DIA Canadian Annual Meeting in Ottawa. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of DIA Global Forum. Today, my guests are two experts who will lead important discussions at this Canadian meeting. Firstly, Melissa Hunt, who is Director of the Bureau for Metabolism, Oncology, and Reproductive Sciences at Health Canada. Welcome, Melissa.
Thank you so much.
And Loretta Del Bosco, Director of Regulatory Affairs Quality Assurance Operations for AbbVie Corporation in Canada. Loretta, welcome.
Hello, Alberta.
Loretta, let me address the first question to you. I'd like to begin by asking you a couple of questions about two sessions that you're going to chair at this meeting. The first is titled Regulatory Considerations for Small and Medium-Sized Enterprises. According to the meeting program, one of the objectives of the session is to describe how the regulatory revisions currently underway will affect small and medium-sized companies. What are some of these revisions?
Actually, in thinking about how I was going to talk about this, or I was going to respond to your question, because it is really quite an interesting one, I realized that having had the privilege of working in the industry for several decades, I kind of have a perspective on what has happened in Canada, at least, in terms of regulatory revisions. And interestingly enough, even though we have had in the past moments in time when we thought we were undergoing transformative regulatory revisions, I have to say, honestly, nothing beats what we're going through right now. It is a very exciting time, that I would call them transformational times. And in thinking about this, I realized that it's transformational for not just, as the session says, small and medium, absolutely for small and medium, but as well for large global companies, as well as the regulator, and as well as many, many, many other key stakeholders across Canada, and especially in our healthcare system.
So, are you basically saying, Loretta, the years of talk are now cascading into a moment of real action and real transformation?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a question of putting everything in perspective about what's happening, because we are undergoing transformation at a significant level, and especially for small and medium-sized companies who obviously by their very nature have limited resources. All of this transformation is causing a lot of churn in their world. And I work for a larger company, and it's causing a lot of churn in my world, so I can appreciate what they're undergoing. So yes, the time of action is right now, but it's going to take a few years for it to really work its way through in terms of actually being actionable.
So specifically, what revisions are we talking about now?
I kind of thought I would talk about three things. One is Bill C-17, which is Protecting Canadians from Unsafe Drugs Act. This was something new. It was focused on safety. It also includes a lot of transparency initiatives. So when I put my small, medium-sized hat on, but never forgetting my large, innovative company, global company hat, there are some aspects that come out of that, such as the release of confidential business information, or the release of clinical information, or the notification of foreign actions, which can have a significant impact, especially the first two with respect to impact on investment in Canada. And that just brings the whole conversation to trying to ensure that as other regulators around the world are undergoing kinds of transformations as well, that Canada is harmonized and or converges with regulators in terms of ensuring that we're not standing out there without trying to be aligned.
So are you saying that the new obligation to protect Canadians from unsafe drugs, which you mentioned, places some significant burdens on small and medium-sized enterprises in Canada?
I would say that it does. And also, we have to be careful about not creating an environment. So, for instance, with the release of confidential business information or the release of clinical information, that when companies are thinking of investing in Canada, when smaller companies are thinking of setting up in Canada, that the environment is positive and that we can bring the therapies for unmet medical needs to Canadians in a very fast way, rather than putting up, without even realizing it, barriers in terms of trying to have revisions to regulations, but not understanding the deep impact that it can have through time.
So will small and medium-sized companies have a tough time complying with this new obligation relating to unsafe drugs?
I think they will have challenges with respect to ensuring that they have the resources to actually manage all of this. So that's just at the day-to-day level. And then from a business perspective, again, I'm not saying that it's necessarily a fait accompli, but at the same time, I think that both for them and for large companies, the environment in Canada, the regulatory environment in Canada, it is very important that it aligns, that it converges, so that it is harmonized with what's happening elsewhere in the world in much bigger markets.
So what are the second and third revisions that you were going to mention?
The second revision has to do around regulatory renewal of drugs and devices, affectionately known as R2D2. There are 15 initiatives. They are actually, to your point that you made earlier, a compilation of a lot of things that we had been talking about for a very long time, but that now are really being worked on. There's a lot of benefits to these initiatives. We have to ensure that the risk is also taken under consideration. In terms of making sure that Canadians have access to innovative medications, I think that's where we have to ensure that these 15 initiatives also are aligned with that kind of thinking. I think there's been positive movement with the first initiative having to do with aligning regulatory and health technology assessments in moving the health technology assessments earlier in the process. Regretfully, in Canada, we have many other stakeholders in the whole process before products are actually accessible to Canadians. So I think that this is great, what we've done so far, what has been done so far. I think that it doesn't fall necessarily in the realm of Health Canada, but we do have to continue to work to ensure that the other stakeholders are also aligned with this thinking of accessibility and, granted, affordability. I think there's a lot in here, such as work sharing with other regulatory counterparts. That is something that is already starting to happen. Again, this is very good in terms of performance, in terms of moving the performance factor, getting accessibility to Canadians. The challenge there is to align the way we review. When I say we, I mean Health Canada and the sponsors that submit data. How we review and get products approved in Canada that are perhaps, there's lessons to be learned elsewhere around the world that we can take under consideration. The other one I think that we need to really be careful on is this whole aspect of the definition of healthcare system needs as it is embedded in a priority review document. Healthcare system needs means different things to a lot of people.
Sure, right.
Stakeholders, and I think that one we need to be careful how it is embedded in pure regulatory documents when it could necessarily affect stakeholders that are not necessarily regulated per se by Health Canada. The other one is regulatory reform, and this one is something that is really much more 300,000 feet, although descending rapidly, and that's really about modernizing our Act and Regulations, Food and Drugs Act and Regulation, in order to meet therapies of the future. This is very exciting. It's also a bit scary because we don't know what we don't know. There's a lot of things, and I think in my next question, there's things that I will talk about, but there's a lot coming, and it's at the speed at which they come that we will need regulations that are new regulations, regulations of the 21st century that really need to be extremely nimble. And so that's very exciting. At the same time, it's also a very big challenge to try to ensure that we don't end up where we have regulations that are limiting and that don't necessarily allow for the technologies that are coming.
in relation to small and medium-sized companies, then this regulatory reform, would you say, provides opportunities for perhaps new technologies coming from startup companies to advance fairly rapidly, but also you mentioned some challenges. So from the standpoint of small and medium-sized companies, what might be some of those challenges? Maybe a regulatory burden, reporting responsibilities that small companies may not be able to handle easily or with existing staff? What did you have in mind?
I think it always boils down to the same two things. It is regulatory burden, absolutely, because they can't, in terms of small and medium-sized companies, handle significant regulatory burden. They also don't even have the resources necessarily at times to be able to work on policy development. So therefore, this is sometimes a challenge for them to ensure that their voice is heard. Thirdly, and it goes back to, if our regulations in Canada are not converging and aligning from a global perspective, it does boil down to market size. It does boil down to being able to have the work done in countries that are going to be supportive and have less regulatory burden or regulatory burden that is aligned from a global perspective, because then it makes it easier, even with limited resources. Because if you are able to meet the regulatory, call it burden, but the regulatory responsibilities, if you're able to meet the regulatory responsibilities of the FDA, and at the same time, you are able to cover most, if not all, of the European regulatory responsibilities, that gives you a completely different perspective than trying to get into, let's say, Australia or let's say Switzerland or wherever, or Canada, if their regulatory responsibilities are not aligned necessarily from a global perspective.
And of course, that's what regulatory harmonization, convergence, and even reliance more recently are all about. And that's why ICH was established almost 30 years ago.
Honestly, I think we have to go beyond just ICH. ICH is absolutely important, and we commend actually Health Canada on the work that they have done and on the leadership that they have taken with ICH. At the same time, regulatory reform, regulatory renewal of drugs and devices is looking at so many other aspects of the regulatory responsibilities and requirements that it goes well beyond, much beyond ICH.
Loretta, let me quickly move to the second session you will be chairing, called Leveraging Partnerships. Can you give us some examples of specific therapeutic areas or specific product types which seem to require more partnerships or collaboration than others to get their products to market in Canada? Just a couple of examples.
Certainly. In terms of partnerships, I think what's very interesting is that this will be the only way to survive moving forward. Nobody will ever be able to survive if they are an island unto themselves. And the way I always look at it, or we look at it, because we are an innovative company, is if you look at the life cycle of a product, you can start from discovery. When you're talking about discovery, we've gotten to a point already, and it will be the wave of the future. We've gotten consortiums now that pool their resources in order to be able to work on areas that continue to elude us, such as Alzheimer's, such as pain. We are looking at the area of clinical trials. The clinical trial development and the trials themselves are changing, so that partnerships with researchers worldwide that don't necessarily work for industry are becoming stronger and stronger, because they are the ones that are at the forefront of sometimes the development of new ways of carrying out clinical trials. First in human, especially, there are a lot of initiatives there to ensure that there is more brain power around first in human trial design. If we look at areas that are really burgeoning, oncology obviously is a strong, significant one, where partnerships continue to be the wave of the future. A lot of the oncology products, because they're getting more and more targeted to meet more and more unmet medical need, are in areas where you absolutely have to partner with diagnostic companies or companies with respect to biomarkers or things of that nature. I think also the way I call it is the future is now. It's all about these aspects that, or these things that we hear in the news all the time, but are actually here today. I'm talking about artificial intelligence. I'm talking about 3D printing.
Machine learning.
Yeah, exactly. I'm talking about areas that even today, we don't even see them and yet are going to need to be regulated in the next few years, and that will form partnerships that where companies and or individuals are going to form strong partnerships that will affect the healthcare system. And so I think that's what in my question before about regulatory reform, that's where that's going, but it's the speed at which it is happening that is very significant. All of these will happen with partnerships.
Embedded in your answer seems to be the idea that partnerships will occur in the future that we cannot even envision today. Strange bedfellows, if you will, such as pharma companies and technology companies that have maybe not collaborated up to now, but will in ways that are perhaps difficult to anticipate even now.
Exactly. And that brings us, or me at least, to the thinking that about these partnerships between regulators, because we will have to look at, especially these companies that right now are not even part of the healthcare system, they and who will become. It's a question of Canada not doing it alone, because these systems, these new things that are coming are not singular to Canada. They are really global. And so it'll be very exciting and very important to ensure that partnerships between regulators takes place as well, to ensure in terms of expertise, but also to ensure in terms of regulations.
Speaking of regulators, let me turn to you, Melissa, and ask you a couple of questions around still the concepts of partnership and collaborations. One of the meeting sessions at the Canada Annual Meeting is titled Regulatory Collaboration Updates. Would you share with us current or planned examples of Health Canada's participation in international work sharing with other regulatory agencies?
So Health Canada has been engaged for some time with international regulators. We share information regularly, but actual work sharing has not tended to be the focus of these interactions. So what you will hear at the Canadian DIA meeting is the fact that we are exploring a little more formalized process for work sharing under our Access Consortium. So that is to say the Australian, Canada, Singapore, Switzerland Consortium. And through this, there's a new chemical entities work sharing pilot. So at this point, we have completed reviews using this work sharing pilot with Australia, and we have seen some efficiencies that were gained by utilizing experts in both regulators and coming to sort of having those dialogues. And from a time perspective, we did see some time efficiencies as well. So during these work sharing submissions, the various regulators are assigned part of the dossier to review, but we do make independent decisions regarding the market approval in these respective jurisdictions. So in my opinion, I think this has strengthened our international partnerships, and we expect that we will undertake more such submissions in the future. And I would also like to take a moment to highlight the benefits to industry with respect to these work sharing submissions. So some of the benefits could include a reduction in regulatory burden, timely regulatory decisions, concurrent market authorization decisions in two different jurisdictions, as well as the opportunity to contribute to advancing regulatory innovation. So to that end, we are looking for opportunities to refine this process, and we're really hoping that there'll be a fair amount of interest from industry in this particular pilot.
The last work sharing example that included the four agencies that you mentioned, Health Canada, Swissmedic, Singapore, and Australia TGA, was focused on a generic drug. In fact, in DIA Global Forum a few months ago, we published an article that described this collaboration. Again, my understanding, that was for a generic drug. Is that correct?
We have had one generic and one innovative product that has been reviewed under the work sharing initiative.
Reviewed and approved by the four agencies?
Reviewed and approved by, well, at this point, the innovative drug was through the Access Consortium, but was a collaboration between Health Canada and Australia. So it was approved by both of those agencies.
Can you illuminate a little bit for us how that work sharing progressed? What happened exactly? How was the work sharing done?
We split the different modules. Both agencies reviewed module 5, but we did sort of parse out the other bits, and we would review one portion and Australia reviewed another. And then we would converge together to share the reviews and leverage those done by our international partners to put together a complete dossier package and make a decision. So we did
have... You mean module 5 of the Common Technical Document?
Yes, right. Module 5. And then we would come together on a multiple occasions to discuss at many different hours of the day, because there's quite a time change difference. And then we came to independent conclusions. So once we had shared, asked questions, and consulted amongst the regulators, we went back with all the completed dossier and review and came to our own independent conclusion.
So the work sharing was focused only on module 5. What about modules 2, summaries and overviews, or module 3s and 4?
Module 5 was what was done independently. So each regulator did module 5. The other regulator would review one module while we would review another so that we could gain those efficiencies. But we did keep module 5 of the ECTD to ourselves. So both Australia and Health Canada reviewed that independently.
For modules that were allocated differently, would you say that so one agency reviewed module 3 but not module 4 and vice versa?
Yes,
and you relied on the other agency to basically understand what they thought of Module 3 and say, for example, Canada did not review Module 3 but focused only on Module 4, and the other agency relied on Canada's view of Module 4 with that review.
That's exactly what happened, yes. So we're gaining efficiencies in that we were not concurrently reviewing the same information, but rather we had assigned parts of the submission to the various different agencies.
That would seem to require a great deal of trust between the two agencies.
I would say so, yeah. I think, again, this is a pilot. So we're working on building that trust and confidence between each other and understanding how each other reviews and works. In the end, we have the complete data package submitted to Health Canada, and then we would have an Australian review for one of the parts of it. And we can still make our independent conclusions. But yes, certainly there is an element of trust that goes into it. And I think it's only through these pilots that we will get to be a little more comfortable with the idea of sharing workload amongst international regulators.
Would it be fair to say that it's not only work sharing, but it's also reliance on another agency? Would that be fair to say?
I think there's an element of reliance because you would not find the efficiencies if you were re-reviewing what had been reviewed by your international partners. But I think as we investigate this as a new pathway and a new way to work, we will get there eventually so that we are completely relying. But we do still completely relying on the portion that was completed by the other regulatory agency. But I think at this point, we're sort of reviewing it with an eye to the Canadian situation and making sure that we're making the right decision for Canadians.
So this collaboration, this work sharing has focused on two products, one a generic drug, another, as you mentioned, an innovative drug. So what's next? A biologic, a monoclonal antibody, a therapeutic?
I think we're open to everything. So, I mean, the challenge with work sharing is that it has to be submitted to the two jurisdictions at the same time. So it requires, from the industry standpoint, some global work on the dossiers and the timing for their submission and the planning. So I think we're very much open to talking to any industry partner who has a submission that would be fitting that bill. Because obviously it's a bit of a challenge when you look at the two different regulatory systems. If one submission was submitted later or before another, it makes work sharing incredibly challenging.
You said two jurisdictions. Is that the upper limit or could it be more than two?
No, I think it could be more than two. I think we've started for the one innovative submission that I referred to, did start this with Australia and Health Canada, but I think we are doing this under the Access Consortium, so there would certainly be, I think, opportunity to roll in other jurisdictions.
Is it up to the sponsor to decide how many jurisdictions to engage? For example, if a sponsor wants to submit an application to 7 regulatory authorities in 7 different economies, is that okay from the Health Canada point of view, or is that too many?
Well, I think that would be the sponsor's decision. With respect to work sharing, I think it would have to be under the auspices of the pilot at this moment in time. So we can't work share necessarily with partners that we haven't already engaged in that type of work. So I think the sponsor can submit at any time to any regulatory agency. But when it comes to work sharing with Health Canada and other international jurisdictions, I think they would have to engage us early on and have a conversation about how they envision that might look. And then we can kind of further talk about how we can facilitate that.
Let me move to another question, the obligatory question these days about Brexit. And is Health Canada engaged in any collaborations with the UK MHRA or the EMA that could be affected by Brexit?
I think this is going to sound a little politically correct, but it is really true that the EMA and the MHRA are two of Health Canada's important international partners. So we regularly collaborate with them both bilaterally and through international organizations such as ICMRA, which is the International Coalition of Medicines Regulatory Agencies, and ICH, which is the International Council for Harmonization. So we know there's still a lot of uncertainty around the terms of Brexit and what that's really going to look like and what that will mean for MHRA and EMA in the future. MHRA has been an important part of the central authorization process and the work sharing for EU regulators. And so whatever the terms of the Brexit arrangement will be, it's already having and will continue to have a significant impact for both regulators. An additional complication is the fact that the EMA is relocating from London to Amsterdam, which is obviously a very massive undertaking. So as a result of that, they've announced that they are going to scale back their international collaborations beginning October of this year and lasting till at least June of 2019. While there will be core business that will continue, and so where Health Canada was engaged in that core business and discussions, we will continue to be engaged. There may be some sort of stalling of some of the less core business type interactions. So Health Canada speaks regularly with both the EMA and MHRA, and we have certainly offered our support to continue any important international work during this transition period.
To that point, are there particular aspects of EMA's temporary slowdown in particular areas that would affect Health Canada and potentially Canadian patients?
To my knowledge, I would say no. I don't think that any of the very important collaborations and discussions and exchange of information will stop as a result of the sort of slowdown. It's more of those maybe innovative ideas that are more pie in the sky discussions that might slow down. But I'm not aware of anything at this point that would impact Canadian patients.
Melissa, let me stay with you and focus on another session at the annual meeting called Exploring New Pathways to Market. Are there any new pathways that Health Canada is exploring specifically at this time?
In terms of exploring new pathways to market, I think this kind of goes back to what Loretta said in terms of the regulatory review of drugs and devices, or the R2D2 initiative. Through that, we are looking at a number of ways that we can facilitate access to patients and the number of innovative pathways. Some of those include the work sharing initiative, but others might be how to better leverage real world evidence across the life cycle. So how that sort of, it's not necessarily a defined pathway, but it could be considered a way to facilitate access. We're also looking at using foreign decisions in certain circumstances to move things from potentially the special access program onto the market where we have a little bit better control and patients have a little more consistent access and supply. In terms of other pathways to market, I think in there we might also roll in the idea of aligning with our health technology assessors, which Loretta also spoke about in her answer. And in that way, we are working in partnership with industry to collaborate with the health technology assessors a little bit earlier and share information that would maybe speed their review. So we really are looking at this from kind of an entire pharmaceutical management chain. And what are the small things we can do to gain big efficiencies?
What is the status of any accelerated regulatory pathways in Canada? In other parts of the world, they're called breakthrough designation or fast track, accelerated approval, PRIME, Sakigake, etc. What is the situation in Canada?
Currently, we have two what might be considered accelerated pathways. One is our notice of compliance with conditions, whereby we could authorize something a little bit earlier in development if we have promising evidence of efficacy. Secondly, we also have our priority medicine. So a priority review would be for an unmet medical need, and we would then commit to doing that review faster than our normal review time. So that currently is how things stand. But we are looking, and again, Loretta did mention the concept of healthcare system need, but we are looking at the current criteria that we have for these accelerated pathways and what makes sense as we move forward. So are there criteria that should be included or excluded? And is there a way to sort of make sure that we're converging internationally in that area and also sort of keeping in mind the sort of Canadian context?
In relation to these accelerated pathways, you've also mentioned health technology assessment, HTA. So the question is, If new products are approved with, say, a more limited set of clinical evidence, are the HTA bodies going to perhaps complain or be concerned that there isn't enough clinical evidence to justify a technology assessment, much less a reimbursement of these products?
We have been engaging our health technology assessors, including provinces and payers, in some of these discussions and some of these new initiatives that we're undertaking. We have heard that concern, and I think it's legitimate for them to be concerned when they don't necessarily have the body of evidence needed to make a cost effectiveness call. That said, while we recognize that that's a challenge for them, it's not within our purview to consider cost-benefit within the regulatory review. So we're working with them to see ways that we can facilitate their review and help to do that quicker. We're also working with them to see if there's some partnerships that could happen, perhaps at post-market, to gather data that would be useful to both parties.
This is really, it could be called the evidence versus access debate, couldn't it? You know, how much evidence is necessary for regulatory approval versus how much evidence is necessary for reimbursement approval. Is this a tension that exists in Canada? How are you all handling it?
Well, I think depending on who you speak to, some might think that this is a big issue. It's a really tough question, this whole idea behind access versus evidence and how much you need in order to make a decision and what are the uncertainties around that decision. So I think that this is something from a regulatory perspective that all regulators struggle with. My personal perspective is that it is a fine balance between the two and that it's not a one size fits all. I think there are many factors that weigh into a decision as to whether or not you're going to accept uncertainty or demand greater evidence. So there are some situations where there are just too many uncertainties around safety or efficacy of a product that would tip the scales towards access if we don't have robust data. But there are others where there's a strong rationale to manage uncertainties in another way in order to support access.
To what extent does Health Canada think about the price of a medicine when considering it for regulatory approval? For instance, south of the border in the US, the FDA is not allowed by law to consider medicine prices in regulatory decisions. How does Health Canada look at this?
Under our regulatory framework, what we look at is the safety, efficacy, and quality of a product. So cost is not one of the factors that we look at, similar to the FDA.
Loretta, let me turn to you on this topic, evidence versus access debate from the industry point of view. How do you all, as an industry, think about this particular debate?
It's an evolving debate. I think there is a lot happening as we speak right now with respect to how much evidence does it take. I think what's really exciting is the fact that this debate will only get stronger as we move into areas faster than we think, into areas that we were speaking about before with technologies that we don't even know exist right now, with areas that are kind of just jargon right now, such as real-world evidence, or the use of, such as what artificial intelligence can bring. So these big concepts. So absolutely, it is something that we will need to continue to have robust discussions on. At the same time, if different stakeholders that regulate what Canadians, in our case, have access to, have different levels of evidence, given especially new technologies that are coming, it will make access extremely difficult.
So in Canada, like in other parts of the world, there is this tension between innovation that is coming ever more rapidly out of science, whether basic or applied, and the ability of society to afford products that are arising out of new and exciting science. Does that tension exist in Canada as it does in other parts of the world?
Absolutely. I think that affordability is interlinked with access. I think the word affordability, though, needs to be taken in another light, as well as access, but I think the whole thing needs to revolve around value. It is really about the total value of existing, but especially new and innovative therapies and technologies bring, rather than a more siloed approach with respect to affordability, because that usually just conjures up dollars and cents.
Well, we will leave it at that. We've come to the end of our conversation. And while I wish you a very successful Canadian annual meeting coming right up, I want to thank you both for joining us today. Melissa Hunt, thank you so much from Health Canada.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Loretta Del Bosco from AbbVie, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.